Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 447. Science Faction, the tripping episode.
You say tripping episode, like
we're going to discuss a group of people who have one leg that's slightly longer than the other.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say, we're the Buffalo Police Department, and that's what we call it when we push an old man to the ground. They tripped.
Quite topical, Damien.
Yeah, I read a lot of news.
And speaking of the Buffalo Police Department, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing fantastic. Bobby, let us know about Bladdergate. You left us in suspense. You know, I think some of us thought, hey, is Bobby coming back from this surgery? Will they even be able to fix this bladder? And yet, here you are recording.
Yeah, so I did. I had my big surgery Tuesday. And here's the thing. I remind my wife of this all the time. I am often incredibly dumb for a smart guy. Like, I'll give myself enough credit of being a smart guy. I'm often incredibly dumb for being a smart guy because I had a major surgery on Tuesday. It was like a 5 hours under anesthesia. They went in one hole and then they ended up taking out another gnarled hole they did in an emergency surgery earlier that was not very precise. So they have two open wounds and then they put in a catheter and they did all this work on the inside. And in my mind, I have no idea why this is. I think it was because I've gone through this whole situation and then this was going to be the surgery that fixed it and I was going to get better. In my mind, I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll get that surgery Tuesday. By Wednesday or Thursday, I should be out with a chainsaw clearing brush again out on, like, I'll be fine by then. And
fighting evil out there protesting.
I am fucked up. Like, I am real fucked up. You actually were nice enough to help me out earlier today and go pick me up some cannabis because I couldn't go. Not only could I not go, I couldn't even send my wife because I'm so crippled. Like, I can't be a good enough dad to a toddler for the hour it would take her to go do it. I don't know how I didn't anticipate this, but I am severely crippled. Basically, what I do for the entire day, I can move about 50 feet at a time, 3 or 4 times a day, and I sit around and I hurt a lot. So that is basically my day-to-day life.
Well, you also got that pair of binoculars and you've been staring into the neighbor's house a lot, and there's somebody you suspect is a wanted killer and his wife's in danger.
It is funny because there are obviously there are protests going on right now about the death of George Floyd. And the main protest center in San Diego is like literally equidistant between where Damien and I live. Like if Damien and I do not live far apart, but if instead of taking the hypotenuse of a triangle, you made a right triangle, which you have to do because the hypotenuse goes through like a park, a city park you couldn't drive through. It is literally between Damien and I are thousands, at some point 6,000 protesters walked by the street 2 blocks over from me 2 days ago. There are thousands of people, and never has there been a time where I'm less able to, like, if shit went wrong, if people started like smashing my car or the front of my house or something like that, my entire defense mechanism is like, hey, look at this catheter. You don't want to mess with this guy, right? Like, I could get pee on you if we got into a physical altercation.
Well, if you had a sufficient number of Home Alone style traps in your front yard, you could detour them.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, right now you're in so much pain that, yeah, your job is just to take the beating while your wife gets your son to the car and drives away.
Yeah, I'm like the sea cucumber where their defense mechanism is to shoot out their organs in hopes that the predator goes after the organs and they can escape.
Except this time it's protesters beating you so bad that stuff comes out of the 2 new holes that the doctors created.
Yes, that's right. Dear. And I'll tell you this, firsthand experience. One of the things we have talked about on this show a whole bunch is the opiate crisis in America and how now 85 to 90% of street heroin users today in America started as regular people with regular jobs who ended up getting a prescription for a procedure or surgery or something from a doctor, and then they got addicted to it. And I can totally sympathize with it. Because let me just say, one, the pills they give you take your pain away. But two, it doesn't just take your pain away. When you're sitting around in pain all day, you're also sad. It's like not a good feeling. You can't do anything. You feel very useless and all this kind of stuff. And the pills also make you feel better. Like not just like pain, but make you feel better. And I wised up to that after the first night, and I was like, these are too much. Like, these are too strong. I got to put these away. And it has been a very, very painful recovery because of that. But I am glad I did that, because looking at it, man, is it so easy to see how people just get, like, just normal human beings who have no drug history, no nothing, get totally addicted to that stuff.
Yeah, you know what? Let me tell you about another controversial figure who got addicted to opiates. His name is Rush Limbaugh, and he changed America.
That's true. I think he was doing like 30 oxy or something a day. I am in literally body splitting pain, and two of those put me out for 8 hours. So that is like an achievement in my mind.
Have you thought about drinking a lot? I mean,
I have
a generation
not.
Ago, that was your pot.
That is very true. No, there's a whole thing about it thinning the blood and, you know, having open wounds that they don't want you to do.
Oh, my God. You're one of those pussies who listens to the doctor, aren't you?
I am. And by the way, thank you for all the fans who continue to send very nice letters of support to me.
I don't believe they exist. Just as with the emails that shit on me, I don't think the emails were wondering how you're doing. I don't think they exist. I think they're...
Not only do they exist, but they are very heartwarming. Thank you very much. And they come from around the world, which is always very nice. And we also got a tweet from one of our favorites, Off Center Archery Podcast, who gave us the note, as parents of an autistic son, thanks for talking about developments in autism science. And they mentioned that we talk about it a lot more than other people.
Thanks for dealing with all the train jokes.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thanks for, you know that whenever he talks about autism, there's going to be a train joke, and you stick around anyway, and thank you for that.
And a Rain Man joke. Like, that is kind of your MO.
I'm good at autism jokes. Definitely good at autism jokes.
But let me just turn that back around to you guys at Off Center and just say, as someone who grew up in a time when we just called it the weird science kid who doesn't make eye contact, thanks for being the type of parents who care enough to actually go seek out that information and learn about autism. As we covered just an episode ago, early intervention and knowledge can dramatically impact the severity of symptoms of your child in the future. And so you are running down that right path. So thanks for being the good parents of the autistic ones, as opposed to the ones that just say, why do you run funny?
Well, I mean, the other ones, I think the other side of the spectrum is it like, I mean, yes, there is the abusive parent who's like, I don't get it. How come my son's not making eye contact and trying to eat the train? I couldn't resist. The other side of the spectrum is the parent who listens to Robert De Niro or Jenny McCarthy over you.
Yeah, I guess that's true. There are a lot of those, and they probably care just as much, but they're unfortunately cursed with the gift of stupidity that forces them down the wrong track. So good for you guys out there at Off Center for following actual science for your kid, and that's going to help them out a lot in life. And then just to follow up, not only will this be a short episode, we're only going to talk about one science article, but I'm sorry to tell everybody, there will not be an I Call BS this week. This is literally just a physical limitation. I am recording this standing up. It's the only position I can actually record this in, and I can only stand up for like 30 minutes at a time. And so this is my event for the day, and this is literally all of my effort and energy is going into this one shortened episode today. If I could make another one for you guys, I would. The Corona episode, which you probably have heard before this, will actually be taped tomorrow, so hopefully I'll be a little bit better by then. But as for now, there just can't be an I Call BS episode today because I have too many holes in my body.
Sorry to extend the episode a little bit longer, but as we know, which is in the rule book, and I'd be happy to show it to you as soon as, you know, one is available. But if ever you cannot compete, if ever you cannot hold a forum, Damien gets the win.
Let me check the rule book.
Nope. I am staring at you through Zoom right now. I'm narrating. He is not looking at a book.
I am looking at a book that's just behind the laptop. And let me...
You're not, your hands aren't even in a reading position.
Let me just say... That, oh my God, it looks like he's correct. Wow, that's amazing. Oh, hold on. There's an asterisk here. It does not count in a time of national turmoil or protest. I'm sorry, Damien. I didn't make these rules. I am just the one reading them from this clearly defined book behind my laptop.
You know, I was incredibly sympathetic towards Mr. Floyd and the protests, but right now I just became a conservative.
Yes, there's nothing going on. All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one. Who is your psilocybin and what does he do?
He's a tumor.
So this is a very interesting new study regarding the use of psilocybin and its effects on the brain. Now, I'm going to start off with a few caveats. This is a super tiny N number of 15. We're not looking at anything that's, you know, super robust or anything like that, but very, very, very interesting. So first, let's start off with some background knowledge. We've talked about psilocybin before. It's the active hallucinogenic component in what we would call magic mushrooms. In fact, it's the precursor component, because what your body does is transfer that psilocybin into another chemical called psilocin, which then actually gets you high or gives you that hallucinogenic experience. We've done some work on psilocybin before, but we have to remember that a lot of this is somewhat, you would almost call it the nascent stages, but I prefer to call it the restarted stages, because the nascent stages were in the 40s, 50s, and 60s as this stuff was being researched very professionally by psychologists, by neurologists, by a bunch of different fields. But then it was basically cut off by our drug war, where we said we can't look at these things, there's no medical use for them. Well, that got restarted about 5 or 6 years ago, thanks to President Obama and the deregulation of some of that stuff, especially hallucinogens for scientific research.
Thanks, Obama.
Like, literally, thanks, bro.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did that sound shitty? I really mean it. Thank you. That was very cool of you.
Well, we have since started studying these again, which means we can throw people in fMRIs and we can look at...
No, please don't throw me in the fMRI.
And this equipment we didn't have in the 50s and 60s. And we can start seeing what's going down in the brain. But we already know the effects. Even before we could legally study it, we already knew some of the effects. We know that hallucinogens tend to downregulate the ego. Some people say it takes your ego completely away. It can lead to some experiences like synesthesia, where you hear a color or smell
an orgasm
or smell a sound or something. And it can lead to greater neural connections between otherwise unconnected parts of the brain, meaning parts of your brain that are working before but not talking to one another all of a sudden are able to directly communicate with each other in ways they can't do not under the influence of psilocin or psilocybin. And that leads some people to think of different ideas, different concepts, to be able to view themselves in different ways. There's this idea that, you know, you get the geniuses, the Elon Musks, who take some mushrooms and go off to Burning Man to think of their next great idea. And to some extent, there's some validity to that idea, because parts of your brain are working with other parts of your brain that they don't usually work under. Now, also, you can come up with like really bad ideas or like get super into fish. But like, there are absolutely sometimes some tangible actual benefits to your cognition from certain hallucinogens.
Every time I've taken mushrooms, I get the feeling that I've always had this epiphany. But then when I'm done, I thought that, yeah, if I wrote that down, I would never want to publish that. I'd be laughed out of, like, I would laugh myself out of the room for reading that.
The epiphany was, one day I'll win, I call BS.
And I did, but the fucking protests, motherfucker. By the way, you are an avid psilocybin user.
I don't know if I'd call myself an avid user. I'm an avid proponent and occasional user.
There you go. With you in this immense pain right now, what would it take to get you to do a mushroom trip right now? What would I have to volunteer, give to you?
That sounds like a nightmare, like literally like a nightmare. You know, this is no joke. At this point in my life, at this, like, maybe a little bit too much information for the rest of you guys, but at this point in my recovery from this surgery, it takes 45 minutes for me to have a bowel movement, because there's so much prep going into it. And then afterwards, and there's rewrapping of bandages and unwrapping and horrible things. Like, you add mushrooms to that.
I'm gonna start dropping Taco Bell off at your door just to tempt you.
I like how you're tempting me with something that tastes horrible.
Damn it, I gotta get it into your feeding tube.
In addition, we've seen that other studies, including those in terms of end-of-life care, shows that psilocybin or psilocin administration to people who are about to die show overwhelmingly positive results in terms of people saying that it lessened their fear of death, it helped them get back together with people that they had wronged in their life and have a sense of finality and more of a, this is an end of a very nice book, as opposed to a terrifying, you know, chapter that I have to go through. And so we know that it has some very strong positive effects, but we still don't know 100% how it works in your brain. Like I said, we've seen before in studies that different parts of the brain are talking to each other that don't normally talk to one another. But that's a very small part of overall what's going on. And a new study came out, again, flew way under the radar, but I think it's really important. So what this study seemed to show is that psilocybin or psilocin affects the claustrum, which is an extremely thin sheet of neurons deep within your cortex. So this is part of the brain. Yet this little tiny thin part of the brain that's really deep in there, it reaches out to numerous other parts of the brain. In fact, it's one of the most interconnected parts of your brain. It talks to the parts that bring in sensory information, somatosensory information, visual information, all of this stuff. It's been kind of described as the conductor. So if you imagine all the stuff coming into attention and consciousness, from what you are feeling to the pain that I'm feeling right now, to what I can see and hear and think, all of that stuff is neural input. And the idea is that the claustrum is kind of taking this and directing your attention on to what to pay attention to. Because if you can't do that, well, then the tiger in the bush right next to you is exactly as exciting as every one of the leaves on that bush. So you have to be able to differentiate. And the idea is that this is the part of the brain that helps you manage that attention. And to some extent, then, helps you with basically being conscious. You know, what is consciousness other than the attention to what is going on around you at any time and being able to observe that? So there is this idea that this is a seat of attention and consciousness deep within the brain. It appears that psilocybin, at least in this very small n number case, tends to downregulate that area somewhat substantially, like up to 30%. And when that happens, that might be why people are getting synesthesia, for instance, because...
And attacked by tigers.
You probably would get attacked by a lot more tigers, because you would have this conversation where you'd be like, I bet you now that tiger, like normally a tiger would eat me, but right now that tiger and I, we could hang out.
Yeah. I anytime somebody jumps the guardrails at the zoo, I assume it's drug related.
Yeah, that's probably a good assumption. So you know, you might be getting synesthesia because that conductor is no longer working in the same way. So all of a sudden the input for color is getting an output for sound or something like that. It also might be why you're dissolving the ego. Because if you think about it, if there is no conductor, if there is not that central figure that you feel is behind your eyes walking around, if that thing that's deciding what to pay attention to, if that goes away, it all of a sudden would feel like you have lost your ego or lost that sense of self. We know that this part of the brain is involved in a bunch of different stuff, from the aforementioned autism diagnosis to schizophrenia and some other brain conditions. So it does seem interesting to think that this part of the brain might be able to be tweaked slightly in order to do what we know hallucinogens can do, which is increase your ability to have things like talk therapy, addiction recovery, personal therapy and PTS treatment, like all of that kind of stuff. We show really high potential for hallucinogens, specifically things like psilocybin, and this might be why. The other upside to this might be that later we might be able to use something like some kind of direct current stimulation on this part of the brain to do this without those drugs, either in a situation where the drugs themselves have other negative effects, you know, like we've talked about, jumping into the gorilla cage, you don't want that. And also the legality effects, at least as of right now, this might be kind of a little window into what is going on inside your brain with those drugs, how we might be able to replicate them. Just some other quick previous science research that looks into what goes on with hallucinogens. We've talked about the huge potential we just talked about for talk therapy. Now, when it was first used in like the 50s, along with LSD, a lot of psychotherapists were saying like one or two sessions with the client with one of these hallucinogens is the equivalent of like 2 years of talk therapy, because it basically dissolves the ego to the point where the person can get through their own bullshit by themselves so quickly. They don't need to be sitting and talking to me for 2 hours a week for 100 weeks.
And 20 years of talk radio therapy.
Yes.
Listening to Rush Limbaugh.
That is true. If you take too many mushrooms, you all of a sudden buy really crappy like wilderness survival kits.
There is a line. Then you find Bigfoot.
The other big one is addiction recovery. Now, addiction recovery with psilocybin is really interesting because there's been a couple of studies that use hard drugs, but more studies that look at smoking cessation. And right now, the evidence seems to indicate that in some of these big trials, 80% of people who went through this treatment using psilocybin for smoking cessation either stopped or cut back on their smoking. That is compared to the best over-the-counter drug, the absolute best, this drug called Chantix, which, by the way, might also make you a crazy gambling or child porn addict. Both of those things have happened to normal people who have taken this drug.
I mean, I was a casual child porn observer.
Yes.
Like, yeah. You know, I'm just a fan of the art. But you know what? I'm not smoking.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was the best drug available, and that is about a 30% rate of either causing smoking cessation or lowering of smoking. This, one trip, no kiddie porn or gambling, 80%. So we know it has really substantial neurological effects. The reason these are interesting is I think these drugs are really powerful for these situations. Not only do we see that they have these things for addiction recovery and for end-of-life care, but studies of people who have taken it throughout their lifetime show over and over again, I think it's something like 80 to 85% of people credit a hallucinogenic experience as one of the top five most important experiences in their life. That's really, really significant. I mean, you think about, like, you know, people who have kids and they get married and everything, and still huge percentage of people go, yes, this was really important. And I would be one of those people. I would think that that is a very important effect on my life. And that has made me kind of part of who I am. I think it can help a lot of people, but I'm also always wary of things that we don't know a lot about. And we don't know everything about psilocybin yet. So every time we get these little bits of information in where we go, oh, this thing, it's actually, it looks like it's having a significant effect on the claustrum, and that explains why all this is going on. Not only do I think that's amazing for future research, and maybe we can come up with a drug that has different effects that the FDA will allow you to use, but that can still help people with all these other conditions, but also it allows you as a person who's going to possibly use this substance, which is because of its illegality, not as well studied, it allows you to know a little bit better what's going on in your brain. It also gives us hints as to the people who absolutely shouldn't use hallucinogens. We've talked about this before too. Those who are predisposed to schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, those who have a lot of those issues in their family, people have schizotypic events in their life, those people should stay away.
Or if you're a fucking narc. Like, yeah, you can't.
Well, those people should stay away because we know that there are issues with the claustrum in people with those conditions, and we know this affects it, and we know that some people who maybe are on the edge can kind of get put over by these hallucinogens. So they're not a panacea, and they're not for everyone, but for people who are neurotypical and able to take it and in a place where they can, these can be really powerful experiences, especially somebody who suffers from PTSD or addiction or crippling depression, those kind of things. These people might get a lot of therapy or therapeutic use out of these things. And it is almost like science's job when we find something that's working to tell those people why it's working so they can make an educated choice as to how to use it.
Well, we really don't know a lot about psilocybin as a pain management tool. And if you were to take some magic mushrooms as a pain management tool during your current situation and then record your findings, you could be a big part of that groundbreaking research, Bobby. By the way, to anybody who has not tried mushrooms before, while it is a very fun drug that can be used to for treatment or to help you realize that you're too big of an asshole, whatever, but it does not do well with pain or discomfort at anything. It amplifies them into nightmarish levels.
Yes, yeah, and like anything gets amplified that is going on there, and having extreme pain would be just nonsensical, not to mention the fact that I have to be very careful with every step and movement I take, and it does take away your coordination a little bit, so that might also lead to just more stumbling and injuring myself.
It's like the anti-alcohol. Like, on alcohol, you become a shittier person, but you can handle more pain. Mushrooms is the exact opposite. You become a more empathetic, probably better person, but no pain tolerance.
Yes, I've actually said that about weed before. I had a stand-up joke about that. Is when you sober up after a night of using alcohol, you look back at the things you did and think, oh my God, I'm an asshole. When you're sober as opposed to drunk. However, when you get high, you look back at the things you did while sober and go, wow, I'm just an asshole in general.
Yeah, when you're drunk, you wake up the next morning and you go, oh my God, I sent pictures of my dick to who? Whereas, like, when you're high the next morning, like, oh my God, I ate 10 pizzas?
Oh my God, I told who that I was really sorry about that thing I did in third grade?
I showed a teacher my penis. He saved the picture. So, you know, am I the asshole?
Yeah, and that was back before digital. Like, he had to have a folder for that thing.
Yeah. A teacher found me on Facebook and thanked me for the picture I gave.
Regardless, for those of you guys who have ever been interested in this topic, we've done a lot of coverage of psilocybin, so I'd advise you to go back and look at some of the stuff and do your research. Again, make sure you're not in one of those problem groups. Make sure you're a person with a grown adult brain, and by that I don't mean 18. You know, I would say you should probably be in your early to mid-20s before you would experiment with something like this. Make sure you're in a good place with good people. They always say set and setting, meaning You want to be in the right place with the right people. Understand that this is not a, well, I'll have a few martinis and then we'll be home in 3 hours. This is a day. You are committing yourself to this for a day. And then do it with somebody who has done it before and can look out for you and make sure that you follow a couple of pretty strict rules. Damien, do you have rules? I have rules when I do psilocybin with people, which is no fire, no jumping off of high things, and nothing sharp. And I found that if you follow those three rules, you are almost always totally fine.
Yeah, my rule is no complaining about seeing my dick. Like, that's no complaint. Hey, I'm on shrooms. Quit ruining this for me. No complaining. It's out there. It's happening.
It's natural.
Hey, this is all natural. This is an organic dick. No robot dick here.
Yeah, the reasons I always have to put those in is because people get fascinated by fire. So somebody will get out their lighter to like light a cigarette and they'll like, woo. And then all of a sudden, you know, they don't understand they shouldn't put that near the bush. And so no fire is one big rule for me. No height, no jumping off heights, because your perception is altered where you can't necessarily tell how high things are. And the normal wariness you have to jump off something that's not like, I'm not saying like 200 feet, but something that's like 12 feet where you could hurt yourself pretty bad, but it's not going to kill you. You're likely under mushrooms to just go jump right the fuck off of it. So that, and then no sharp things because you're slightly uncoordinated. So you go and try and cut up an apple with a knife and you're likely to cut your hand. So remember those.
I'm a better shot when I'm on shrooms, Bobby. Give me the gun back.
Remember those concepts. Do it with somebody who is experienced and can talk you down. And just remember, if anything, people are always worried about the bad trip. Bad trips can happen, but every bad trip can also just become a good trip whenever you want it to be. You just have to be with somebody who can kind of take you out of that place and take you there. So
yeah, if you're in a bad relationship, don't go with the person who fights with you all the time.
No.
Please go with the opposite of that person.
Yeah, yeah. And you might go out off on your own and figure out your own shit and come back and fix that relationship pretty damn quick, actually.
Yeah, you come back and you with divorce papers.
Yes, either divorce papers or you just look at the person and be like, you need to stop treating me like shit or I'm going to leave because I'm worth stuff.
Who's been telling you that, babe? Who's been telling you that?
Since, as Damien pointed out, I have been somebody who promotes psilocybin use, I want to make sure that anyone who uses it has the most information possible about it. And I think this is a big part of that. And as we knock out these big parts and understand more and more how these things work in our brain, hopefully they become legalized and available to everyone who needs it and wants to use it, because it is an amazing tool for not only things like PTSD and addiction recovery and trauma and all that stuff. Quite frankly, it is just a good thing to have spring cleaning for your brain. It's like going to therapy. It is probably good for everybody to have a little bit of it, again, assuming you're not in one of those groups we talked about before. So I wanted to make sure you were as aware of the science behind it as possible, and I'll keep making you aware of it. I'm so sorry this episode can't be longer. I'm literally reaching the end of my standing time, and I'm so sorry we won't have an iCall BS this week. I think I will be up and running, assuming that this thing doesn't kill me by next week. I will be up and running and ready to go, and we'll go back to our normal 3 episodes a week starting next week.
What can we do to make your colon explode? Like just a cork in the butt? Like we'd have to like...
To be fair, that's kind of what the opiates were trying to do before. I don't know if you're aware of this, but they actually have a secondary effect.
Getting you into nirvana.
Oh dear. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 448.
Thank you for tuning into the Rush Limbaugh Radio Hour. Let me tell you about an experience I had with a couple of liberals. I walk into my living room and bam, my family's there to give me an intervention. Typical libtards.
You've been listening to Science Function. Wait, that's not right.